I know it is frustrating. We are watching the definition of low prices cure low prices. Only prices aren't reacting. Weekly export sales of soybeans, huge. A huge daily export sale of corn to China. Huge beef and pork sales in the weekly report. Traders talk about buying the dip. China is doing it.
Live from behind the impenetrable armor of a country boy's immune system via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with U.S. Senator Pat Roberts from Kansas. Then we've got American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval. Chip, have I got this right? And in the final segment, Polly Dobbs from Dobbs Legal Group. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. There's much, much more as well. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory. Kick us off, buddy.
Wow, what a lineup we have got for you. We have not had Senator Roberts on AgriTalk for some time. He's obviously a very busy man. They are now working on negotiating with the House on the COVID relief, but he's going to carve some time out for us, Davis. And we're going to have a conversation with Pat Roberts from Kansas this morning. So looking forward to that conversation. As I think most know, the senator is not seeking re-election this year. Maybe we'll get a little insight into who he is supporting in that Senate race there in Kansas. I got a feeling that I've got a good idea who it is. So, and of course, Zippy Duval, fresh. He's still on the recovery from a positive coronavirus test, so he's still on the recovery there. Zippy is going to make some time for us here this morning as well. It's going to be a good conversation with that, because we'll get his reaction to what's going on out in Denver. We'll get his reaction to what's going on in the negotiations between the House and the Senate on this COVID-8 relief package. Now is a good time to have Zippy on, because we need some of his perspective on everything that is happening. All right, buddy, let's get to the news. Good. What do you got?
Well, Chip, this is a big one, too. A group of bipartisan senators and representatives have sent a letter to congressional leaders asking for the Farming Support to States Act to be included in the COVID aid package being negotiated this week in D.C. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin talked with us earlier this morning, and she says the $1 billion package would put decision-making on how the funds are used at the local level, allowing the aid to be targeted.
This flexibility really allows us to have tactical solutions right on the ground, innovative solutions, and that's why it's gained the support of the National Association of State Ag Departments, as well as organizations like the Farm Bureau. And it's a bipartisan measure in the Senate, because each of us across the country who represent ag states have seen different types of disruptions that need local solutions.
Chip, again, that's Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The Farming Support to States Act is supported by the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and the American Farm Bureau Federation. We should probably bring this up with Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval about the act later on in this morning's show, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was talking with Senator Baldwin earlier, she didn't joke about $1 billion, but she did make a reference to, in this day and age, it's not that big of a bill at $1 billion. Yeah. You don't have to go back that long in history where we would have been saying, man, oh, man, this is $1 billion bill.
Right.
But in the day and age when we're talking about $1 trillion relief efforts, it's
you've had a busy day today already, brother.
Oh, yeah.
You've been hitting it hard. Good for you.
Absolutely.
Good for you. U.S. exporters are reporting a massive daily corn sale to China this morning to the tune of nearly 2 million metric tons. This comes as Chinese state-owned corn reserves fly off the shelves. That marks the highest price recorded in 10 days of auctions of those state-owned corn reserves, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want some great perspective on it, go back to Tuesday's Tuesday afternoon's AgriTalk and listen to the conversation that I had with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. They had this nailed. Yep. They saw a big sale coming, and like I said, on the open, we've got corn steady to a penny higher after a 2 million ton sale. It doesn't seem right, but it's just so difficult to overcome what is viewed as a non-threatening growing season for this corn crop.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would remind the session is not yet closed. There's time.
That's
yet
right.
Today. After an hour-long meeting with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yesterday, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said, quote, "I do think there is a subset of issues that we agree on, but overall we are far from an agreement." According to Mnuchin, sticking points include a compromise on unemployment insurance, state and local assistance, and liability protections for businesses. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said the GOP will not pass a bill that does not include those liability protections. Biofuel and ethanol advocates are growing frustrated with the Senate GOP relief package. Renewable Fuels Association President and CEO Jeff Cooper said the Senate's language is not clear on how or whether ethanol producers would benefit from being included as agricultural processors in the GOP's ag relief provisions released on Monday, Chip.
Yeah, and that obviously the industry is looking for some aid to get back on their feet after losing some money during the COVID quarter.
Hey, and here's big news. Finally, President Trump says he will begin to withdraw the roughly 12,000 U.S. troops stationed in Germany. Yeah. Trump noted his dissatisfaction with Germany's contributions to NATO, saying Germany, quote, "has taken advantage of us for many years, and we don't want to be the suckers anymore." Chip.
Wow. Yeah. GDP, U.S. GDP in the COVID quarter off 32.9%. I was talking with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady earlier this morning, and I said, you know, how can that happen without riots in the – oh, wait. There are riots in the streets. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Grover's. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm very well. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Here we are. We've got the summer meeting going on out in Denver for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. What's the long-range plans coming out of it?
Okay, so the beef industry does a long-range plan every 5 years, and they introduced their new one at this meeting in Denver. And basically what they're trying to do is this is a task force-driven mission to ensure what they call the long-term prosperity of the U.S. beef industry. And they basically, Chip, lay out plans on ways and what they want to do and how they want the industry to respond. Growing global demand for U.S. beef by promoting beef's health and nutritional benefits would be one example of things they're trying to do. One of the new things in this, Chip, is they want to make traceability in the U.S. a reality. So as we talked before, the U.S. is far behind many other countries in a nationwide traceability program. They're advocating a voluntary program, but still they want more inclusion with that.
Gotcha.
One other thing that they've done, Chip, this week was they had their marketing committee also met. Yep. And they adopted a resolution supporting a voluntary approach to increase the cash trade in the market. So probably a little less teeth in that resolution than what a lot of people would like to see, but at least they addressed it.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking with Senator Roberts about that coming up next here, Greg. It's going to be an important conversation. Thanks, buddy.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Floria. I've got Davis Michelson with me, and we are not going to waste any time and get right into this because we've got Senator Pat Roberts from Kansas, chairman of the Senate Ag Committee. Senator Roberts, welcome back to AgriTalk.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, Senator, I do not want to run out of time without saying this at the end of the show, so I'm going to say it right up front. You're a Marine. You've been a public servant of the people of Kansas and of the United States for, what, 50 years? You're a champion for farmers and ranchers. Your history of working on good ideas, not just party-based ideas, is well documented, and it's a strong history. And for all of that and much more, Senator, thank you so much for your service.
I truly appreciate that. We couldn't do it without folks like you. You're the voice of agriculture that people listen to, and we can do a lot of work back here, but unless our story is told to all of our producers out there, why we don't really gain any traction. So thank you for all of your help and support down through the years, and I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely, Senator. It is earned and deserved, no question. Okay, topic of the week, the COVID relief package. What is your take? What do you like about the ag-related items in the COVID relief package?
Well, we've been working with Secretary Perdue. I think he's been doing a good job. This next tranche of assistance, COVID-4, or what we call the HEALS Act, the House bill is called the HEROES Act. So we just have just a little bit of difference in the cost of that. Ours is $1 trillion, theirs is $3 trillion. So you can see sort of a Grand Canyon there in terms of cost. But we have to get this done, even though we have a pandemic of politics along with COVID-19. We just have to work together in good faith, and we'll get that done. But at any rate, with regards to the Department of Agriculture, farmers, ranchers, growers, an additional $20 billion to respond to the challenges in the livestock sector as well as the broader agriculture industry. I would point out between the $14 billion in partial replenishment to CCC from the CARES Act, the additional $20 billion would have $34 billion to assist producers in the weeks ahead. That's unprecedented. If you add it all up in terms of the $6.5 billion and the $9 billion, you're getting pretty close to $50 billion the federal government, recognizing all of the hurt and the problems that we're going through with regards to agriculture. I think giving that to the Secretary is probably the best approach. We're working very closely with Secretary Perdue. I think he's been doing a good job.
Okay. Your counterpart in the House, House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson, has expressed that he wishes that his committee had more say over how that money was being distributed out to agriculture. Sounds like you're pretty satisfied with the job that Secretary Perdue is doing.
Well, you always have questions. You always have, different views. I could just single out the problems we're having in Kansas, more especially with the livestock industry, and hope we could get more money there, and I think we will nationally. But I've talked to Colin about this. This is one of these rare instances where we don't agree. We usually do not agree, and we talked about this at length. I think the idea was that you would provide the $20 billion, but it would be subject to a two-week referral, both to the Senate Ag Committee and the House Ag Committee, to go over what the Secretary had proposed and then recommend any changes. That's a lot like trying to pass a farm bill in 2 weeks. I mean, the lines would be long. Obviously, there are people who are very concerned right now, cotton industry, ethanol, et cetera, et cetera. But you can make the case with the Secretary on the $20 billion that he has on that increase to get what you want. I'm sure with Colin, I know that the Secretary listens to Colin very carefully, and I know he works with us very closely as well. I think to open that up to a two-week session right before we're trying to figure out how that money is distributed is just not a good idea. The lines will be long and deep, and I'm afraid we will be seeing some cuts, more especially in crop insurance. So I understand the concern to have more say with regards to the House Ag Committee, Senate Ag Committee, but at this particular time, we better rely on consistency and reliability. Sometimes you lose more than you gain.
Okay. Okay. The idea of negotiating a farm bill in 2 weeks, just it you're right, it seems ridiculous. And speaking of the farm bill, there are rumblings out there that maybe this farm bill should be reopened, that we should re-examine the supply side or the commodity title, the safety net that is out there, the ARC and the PLC. Opening up a farm bill before the expiration date seems dangerous to me, Senator.
I think I was trying to find a word that fit, and I think dangerous is probably the best one that you have suggested. To reopen it and renegotiate it and redo it, what this is really a call to go back to supply-side management.
Yeah.
Set-aside. The more you set aside, the more our competitors increase their production.
Yep.
And I just think that's a hole we don't want to go back into. I understand there's a lot of concern with regards, well, we have PLC, we have the other income.
ARC.
Yeah, ARC, the ARC program.
Yep.
And then we have crop insurance. And then I just think you open up a farm bill in this environment. As I said before, the lines would be long and deep, and I think crop insurance would be in danger. There's always folks who want to use that as a bank as opposed to using it for its intended purpose.
Yes. Yeah. I got to ask your opinion. Go ahead.
I just want to say one thing. We are really focused on protecting existing farm bill authorities and crop insurance from further attacks and duplication in the near term. That's why I don't think opening up the farm bill at this particular time. That doesn't mean that we can't take a look at the $20 billion and what the Secretary does with it. And there are a lot of other things that the Secretary can do. And there are a lot of things we can have hearings on. But opening up the farm bill, I think, would be self-defeating.
Gotcha. Let's talk about that cattle market specifically here. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association's meeting out in Denver right now. They are favoring a voluntary approach to, in an effort to bring some more transparency to the cash market. We've got the proposal from your friend, Senator Chuck Grassley, the 5014 proposal, which would try to regulate some transparency into the market. Can that even be done, Senator? Can you regulate transparency into a market?
That'd be pretty difficult. Remember, there are three investigations with regards to price discovery and transparency in the cattle market, and what has happened with COVID-19 backing up virtually every market. We have five packers in Kansas. We've had a real backup. We've had a real problem, but we've made great strides in getting that moving again. The Department of Agriculture investigation, and there's one in the Justice Department, one in CFTC. Those are not out yet. It might be a good idea to wait on those, by the way. But the Department of Agriculture investigation in the cattle box beef market does, quote, something need to be done to bring more transparency to the cash cattle market. Can transparency be regulated? I appreciate the USDA's recent report. I hope all of our cowboys get access to that. I know they had a big meeting out in Denver here. Mm-hmm. Just these last couple of days. But that was a report on the volatility that followed the fire at the beef plant in Holcomb, Kansas, nearly a year ago, and the subsequent market volatility that has continued during the COVID-19 pandemic. The USDA report did not identify any findings of wrongdoing, but they did provide some considerations from a lot of stakeholders to weigh. We welcome the continued dialogue with the cattle market folks and to understand their perspectives on the report and how Congress and administration can work with them to improve market transparency. One thing we have to do is do the authorization on the livestock marketing reporting
right.
Act. Yep. At that time, we may talk about Senator Grassley's bill. He has introduced a bill to require the beef packing plants to purchase 50% of the cattle processed right. at each plant every day on the cash market. I would point out that 70% of the cattle
right.
Is under a formula plan, which allows producers to get a higher price. That
right. Senator, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are out of time. We're up against a hard break. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, tell Zippy hello.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, these export sales, I said in the open that we're kind of witnessing the definition of low prices cure low prices. The only problem is we're not getting any price reaction.
Right. You know, huge daily export sale, the corn sale to China this morning. The third largest daily corn sale on record to any Jeez. Country and the largest to China ever. So, but, you know, we're trading fractionally to a penny higher here this morning. So, like you said, just no price reaction. Soybeans, the weekly export sales for new crops, so the 2020-2021 marketing year, were absolutely enormous much bigger than anticipated. And yet we've got the soybean market under a little bit of price pressure. And I think you can tie both of those back to demand matters, but it matters during the right times of the year. And right now the main focus is on weather and quite honestly, the 10-day and 2-week forecast just doesn't have a lot of threatening conditions in it for the Corn Belt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Weekly export sales report also included, 30,000 metric tons of beef, 40,000 metric tons of pork, and we're not getting much of a reaction there either.
No, at least cattle futures are trading to the upside. And China was a small buyer of beef. It was a much bigger buyer of pork. So the disappointing trade so far this morning is in the hog market because we've got the futures under pressure. And like I said, China was a big weekly buyer of U.S. pork.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just a quick update here. We've got the Dow off about 325 points right now as the market is trying to digest some tweets from President Trump again. Thanks, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize the Pork Checkoff for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Davis.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah. When Senator Roberts was talking about reopening the farm bill, and the reason mm-hmm. that some want to reopen it is because they're looking for a return to supply side management and yeah. set asides, you could almost hear the disgust in the voice of one of the authors of Freedom to Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing he's there to defend it right now. It's going to be interesting to see who steps up to take his place alongside some of the other farm state senators in that defense going forward. So, yeah, we've got a lot to learn about the makeup of the Senate Ag Committee after the departure of Senator Roberts. Wow. Okay. We got to keep moving here, man. We got Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, on the line with us. Zippy, it's good to talk with you. Welcome back.
Well, good. Thank you, Chip. I'm proud to be back with you today.
Yeah, so tell us, how is the recovery coming from the coronavirus?
I'm coming along. I had about 16 days of symptoms, and I had every symptom they listed under. My temperature spiked about 3 different times. But I'm on the mend, feel real good, feel strong in the mornings, and then I get play out in the evening. So I'm in the mode of trying to build back my strength. I've gotten my appetite back now, so I think it's just a matter of days.
Good. Good. Well, boy, what? Thank God, Zippy, to hear about the recovery. tough go of it. So I think you heard the conversation that we had with Senator Roberts, and like I said, he's a Marine, 50 years combined in the House of Representatives and the Senate, real champion of farmers and ranchers out there. Is there a Roberts memory that kind of tops your list, Zippy?
I just, some of the memories I have of him coming to our national convention and how our people received him so well. We are so fortunate to have Senator Roberts in a leadership role all these years. We'll always be indebted to his dedication to agriculture and what he's done for the American farmer. And we'll never forget Senator Roberts for all the time and effort he's put into making our lives better.
Yeah. Okay, let's get your take on a couple of things that he talked about. And he used my word in describing what it would be to reopen the farm bill to re-examine some of the safety net. And I called it dangerous. I don't know if that fits with your thinking or not.
I think you're right on target. This last farm bill was a very good farm bill and incorporated a lot of risk management tools. And I think to open it up would make us vulnerable to a lot of people that would like to attack those programs that are really good for agriculture.
Okay, so those that are looking for some supply-side management, whether it be through acreage, set-asides, whatever, and that's the one that I keep hearing now, Zippy, what's your message to them?
Well, I think Senator Roberts said it best. You know, if we cut back, the rest of the world is going to increase, and they'll gain our markets that we have. So I think our farmers have done a great job. We just got to find some way to make sure this trade that we are involved in across the world continues to grow, because that's where our future is. We need to produce what we're capable of producing. We need to take advantage of the technologies that are coming down the pipe. We need to do all the right things for the environment and sustainability, but we need to have a place in our commodities, and trade is what gets us there. And so we're real excited about some of the things that this administration has brought forth in trade, with the agreement with China and renegotiation of Korea and Japan, USMCA. All those have been very positive things for us, and we just hope we can continue on that track to increase that trade.
Boy, I'm glad you mentioned all the trade agreements that have been negotiated, and we're working on a new trade agreement with the UK. It's not just China, Zippy, but boy, there is so much market focus on what China is doing. They were in the market big in the previous week. They had their biggest one-time purchase of U.S. corn was announced this morning. It feels like China is at least attempting to live up to the terms of phase one of the agreement.
Yes, and it took them so long to try to kick in, but once they did, they've made some huge purchases, so they're gaining on it quickly. Whether or not they can reach the goal, we're not sure about that, but we sure are encouraged by what we're seeing happen in the purchases there. And you're exactly right about the UK. And then, we just got a report from Europe where they're continuing to crack down on their farmers, limit their ability to use technologies, I just wonder what's going to happen to the European farmer and what will happen to the markets for us.
Yeah, I do too. To hear some of their leadership talk about encouraging additional food imports so that more of their ground can be used for carbon capture and stuff like that, Zippy. I don't know. Europe may be a bigger opportunity in the years ahead than what I think it is right now.
Yeah, if we can just get past some of the stumbling blocks we have between them as far as our technologies that we use, that could be a huge market. And it's encouraging to hear this administration say that it won't be a trade treaty with Europe without agriculture being part of it. So that's really encouraging. We continue to press forward on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, other issues can be negotiated and have to be negotiated. There's no question about it. But do not leave agriculture out of the party when it comes to trade with Europe. Okay. Earlier this morning, had a conversation with Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. She is pushing, and others are pushing, the Farming Support to States Act. On the surface, because it would move the decisions on how to use money closer to the problems that are being addressed, it seems like a common sense approach, doesn't it?
It does. You know, we always like government closer to the people, and any time that local governments or state governments can be in more control and have more say-so, they're the ones that have the pulse of the people in their states, and I think that's a good move. We're supportive of that.
Good, good. Should we apply that common sense approach to more of the COVID aid package regarding agriculture that's being negotiated right now?
Well, I think there's a lot of cooperation between the states and the USDA, and Barb Glenn, who runs NASDA, is a national organization of commissioners of agriculture. They do a great job of communicating with USDA, and I think there's a lot more going on in that area than what we're probably aware of.
Okay. All right. If you could send a message to those negotiating the COVID aid, what would that message be?
Well, we just need to make sure that our farmers are very aware of the problems, because, you know, this COVID aid touches parts of agriculture that's never dealt with USDA. And they're not reluctant, but just really don't know how to do that. So there's a education factor or informational factor that needs to be involved in that, so that our farmers know how to go take advantage of, especially our smaller organic farmers, or people that's never dealt with it. You know, a lot of our beef industry farmers never mm-hmm. dealt with USDA. So,
right.
You know, how to do that and how to go about doing that has been a little bit of a stumbling block. And we have a deadline coming up, so we need to make sure that information gets out to our farmers so that this money can be distributed among them, because we know how desperately they need it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Former USDA chief economist Joe Glauber was on the show with us yesterday, gave us his explanation of why he doesn't think that CCC funds should be used to support some of the downstream industries, biofuel producers being one of those. Should we be pulling support for ethanol specifically from CCC funds?
Well, I think in this situation that it should be considered. The ethanol industry and the infrastructure around it is so vitally important to our rural communities and our farmers there, as a huge market for those corn farmers. So, you know, I think there needs to be consideration in this situation. Of course, long-term CCC should be used for making sure that Title I commitments are made.
Gotcha.
Follow through with.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. The cattlemen are meeting out in Denver. They're favoring a voluntary approach to bringing more transparency to the cash market, staying away from mandated or regulatory approach. Is that the right take?
Yes, we do not support seeing any mandates or regulatory approach. So we think they're heading in the right direction. Was glad to see in the USDA report that kind of gave us a springboard to have some discussions around transparency and in the marketplace. So we're looking forward to that. I would agree too with the senator earlier that we got to make sure that the reauthorization of the mandatory price reporting gets up for 5 years, and you know that's coming up in 60 days. We don't need to divert our attention from that. But we surely do want to look at how we can make sure there's more stability in the and fairness in the beef market.
Absolutely. Zippy, it's good to hear that you got your appetite back. I wish there was more state fairs where you could use it.
Yeah, I wish there was too. And I tell our farmers to beware, because this is a real thing. Hey, It hit me for 16 days. And I was
Thank you, Zippy. Thank you.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
So, Davis, I was kind of running down a mental checklist here of some of the decisions that are being made right now that are going to have a long-term effect on agriculture, and it's a long list. We've talked about so many of them today with Senator Roberts and with Zippy Duvall from American Farm Bureau Federation. That was a speed round with Zippy. Good.
It really
grief.
Was.
We
Lightning
hit a
round.
Lot of topics there.
Yep.
Hit
yep.
a lot of topics there. And these are some important, heady decisions, conversations that are being had right now that are going to have long-term wanted or unintended consequences down the road.
Sounds like we're pulling the future forward. Perhaps
we are addressing it as it's coming at us. There is no question about that. No question about that. All right. Hey, let's have a conversation right now with Polly Dobbs from Dobbs Legal Group. Polly, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, Chip. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're going to be part of the Farm Journal Field Days, which is August 25th through the 27th. It's going to be field demonstrations, presentations, panel discussions, just a wide selection of topics and pavilions to check out. Make sure that you go to farmjournalfielddays.com and get signed up for that right now. Polly, before we talk about what you're going to talk about at the field days, I'm curious, are families using this time of social distancing as an opportunity to do more long-term succession planning?
Some are, but I will tell you I've not been buried by the onslaught of farmers knocking down my door to try to get their succession plan in place because they're scared of their impending death. If anything, you know, when briefly in Indiana, we shut down end of March through May 1st, and I offered my clients, well, let's have a telephone call instead of a face-to-face, or let's Zoom. And my farmer said, we'll just wait till this all clears up. We'll come in later. So kind of quite the opposite because farmers are busy, and they were putting out a crop, and I'm typically the last person anybody wants to talk to, and this is a tricky subject, and nobody wants to face their own mortality, so they're tending to put me off. But on the other hand, I have a handful of non-farm clients, doctors, nurses, that sorts of thing, and they were just banging down my door, please help me get this updated. I'm worried. I'm at risk. Let's get this straightened out.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I assume you would encourage your farmers to – hey, come on, let's step it up. Let's take advantage of the time that we've got.
Yes, absolutely. It's not going to get any easier if you ignore it. So let's just get something in place now. And hey, if you live another 20 or 30 years, we'll have lots of opportunities to tweak it so that it fits the circumstances in the future. But let's put something in place. If you died tomorrow, you got the right safety net underneath your family farm and your operation. So it's got a good chance of success at the next generation.
All right. Safety nets for the farms. That gets into your topic that you're going to be discussing at the Farm Journal Field Days. Prenups, postnups, and buy-sell agreements, how to keep assets in the blood. I don't even know how farmers and farm families start the conversation, Polly, let alone coming to a decision on this.
I know. So every opportunity I have to talk about it, I want to take the stigma out of it, and then I can be anyone's excuse. Hey, we heard this lady lawyer on the radio talking about why farm kids ought to have prenups, or why dad ought to have a prenup before he remarries after mom dies. And the more we talk about it, the less stigma is around it. And then I always say, blame me. Start the conversation by saying that you read an article I had in Farm Journal, or you clicked on my virtual recording at the field days from Farm Journal and you learned a few things and you want to start the conversation. Blame me, but just start talking and start planning.
Right. And get that conversation going. And the one thing, the if it's constructed properly, there is prenups do have teeth. I hear all the time, prenups, you can sign anything you want. They're not going to stand up in court anyway. But they do, don't they?
They do, and they got to be done right. So if it's going to be last minute and sloppy, don't bother, because your future daughter-in-law's lawyer can tear it apart. So a couple keys are, we need plenty of time, okay? Not at the rehearsal dinner. That's not when we sign these things, because that sure looks like duress, because somebody's already paid a caterer, and the DJ's coming, and the guests are already in town. They'll sign whatever needs signed to make the wedding go through. So plenty of time so each side doesn't feel like they're under duress. And full disclosure, we got to know what we're waiving rights to. So one of my themes is that a marriage certificate brings along very strong property rights, both at divorce and at death. And the prenup waives those rights so that we have the flexibility to plan like we want, and we aren't stuck to these state statutes that give spouses certain rights. So a young couple might say, well, we don't own anything. We don't need a prenup because we're poor. Well, if there's a family farm upstream and grandma and grandpa or mom and dad are thinking they're going to hand it down to you, you need a prenup, even though you're still poor, that identifies those future family farm assets. It's a contingent future inheritance. Your parents might get mad at you and disinherit you in the future, but if you do inherit it, that's going to be your separate property, and it's not going to be subject to division in the event of divorce, and it's not going to be subject to spousal rights to elect assets at death. So just having that full disclosure is very important, because we need to know what we're waiving. You know, we don't want spouse in the future to say, oh, gosh, I didn't know it was $10 million worth of land. I thought it was just a little patch. So that would be a reason that the prenup would be thrown out, because there wasn't adequate disclosure. And then you really need advice on both sides. Each of the future spouses should have their own lawyer review it and explain it to them, so there's full understanding, and nobody can say, hey, I didn't know what I was giving up. That shouldn't be binding. So
exactly.
They stand up if they're done right.
Yep, good deal, good deal. Okay, learn more about this from Polly, Farm Journal Field Days, August 25th through the 27th. Polly, it's good to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Chip. Have a good one.
All right, that's Polly Dobbs, Dobbs Legal Group. Wow, what a show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You got to come back this afternoon, because we're going to have a conversation with Sue Martin right here on AgriTalk.